I'm going to get started because it's time. So we talked last week about worship and what is worship, and the fact that there really isn't a fabulous definitions of worship, and that worship means lots of different things. And so we ended up talking a little bit last week about sacrificial worship and the idea of offering a sacrifice to God. And I wanted to talk a little bit more about the evolution of sacrificial worship, particularly as it relates to the Passover meal, and how that became both the Passover as the Jewish community celebrates it today, and the Eucharist as we celebrate it today. All right? So I'm not going to go all the way back to the way back. I'm going to go to the time of Jesus, okay? And then we'll go forward from there, and where we get to the place that things split, we'll go on. At the time of Jesus, there is a temple in Jerusalem. All right? The temple in Jerusalem at Jesus' time was called Herod's Temple. It had been built by King Herod the Great. Not the King Herod that you know about from the story of Jesus, but his grandfather. Okay? Great-grandfather, grandfather, I don't know, his ancestor. Okay? I said that and I thought, is that right? I don't remember. Something like that. Couple of generations before Jesus, this temple has been built. And it's beautiful and it's glorious. And this was the temple that was built not to replace the temple that was destroyed when the Jews were carried off into Babylon, but a temple that was destroyed after that. All right? So Herod builds the temple, and it's been the temple for several generations. So the way Passover is practiced at the time of Jesus, anybody who can get to Jerusalem gets to Jerusalem, okay? And that's a pretty big deal in a world where most people don't travel more than 20 miles from where they're born. Now, a lot of people don't live more than 20 miles outside of Jerusalem. That's still a pretty big, you know, think about walking 20 miles through the desert. That's, you know, quite a journey. But people travel from about 100 miles, if they can, to get to Jerusalem for the Passover. If you can't get to Jerusalem for the Passover, you say the prayers, but you don't eat the meal. Because you can only eat your Passover meal with a lamb that has been offered at the temple. Because it's a sacrifice, right? So if you can't get to the temple, you can't make your sacrifice, you don't have a lamb for the Passover. So a lot of people at Jesus' time are doing what Jesus and his disciples are doing, looking around for a place to eat the Passover meal, because they don't live in Jerusalem. So remember the Good Friday or the Palm Sunday thing? The disciples say to Jesus, so where do you want to eat the Passover? And you know, he says, go to this guy and he'll give us a room. So that's why they end up in an upper room. The family is probably eating their Passover in the main room. They happen to have an upper room that Jesus and his disciples can eat Passover in. This is not unusual, right? Think about how this works. This is a time before Motel 6. You know, it's not like you can rent. So you find a place that you can eat the Passover with your family and whatever extended family you can include. This is just to backtrack a little bit. This is also where the idea of the money changers come from, because it's not just the Passover sacrifice that's offered at the temple, it's all of the sacrifices that are offered at the temple. The sacrifices in Thanksgiving for newborn children, the sacrifices for sins, the sacrifices for harvest, all of the sacrifices are offered at the temple. Most people don't bring their animals with them to sacrifice. They buy them in Jerusalem. Well, over time it's evolved that there's this, because the Roman coinage has the image of the emperor on it, that that's not considered an appropriate coinage to buy sacrifices with or to offer to the temple. So they have to change their money from all of these places in the empire into coinage that doesn't have an image on it, a graven image on it. So that's where the money changers come from. And then you can use that coin to buy your Passover lamb rather than having to bring it 20 miles through the desert and attracting the wolves to your campsite, right? So that's what the Passover is at the time of Jesus. By the time of Jesus, it's become rather ritualized, all right? So there, you do certain things in certain orders. So you eat the lamb, and it's basically dinner. So you sit around the table, and you eat your lamb, and you tell the story of the Passover of the angel of death, of the 12 plagues of Moses, or 10 plagues of Moses, of the 10 commandments, of the freedom from Egypt, right? Because that's what Passover is all about. You tell the story. And at the end of the Passover, you end with a piece of bread that is broken and shared, and a cup of wine that is blessed and shared. And that is the end of the Passover meal. So when Jesus is sitting with his disciples, they eat the Passover meal, they tell the story of the rescue, how God rescued the people from Egypt, and he gets to the end of the meal, and he picks up the bread and breaks it, as you would do. So at this point, the disciples are just like, okay. Yeah, I mean, the weird stuff came at the beginning when he washed their feet, right? So now he's broken bread. He's like, this is normal. And then he says, this is my body, which is given for you. Whenever you eat this, do this in remembrance of me. Right? And now they're going, huh? What did that? That's not, those aren't the words. You got it wrong, Jesus. The words you're supposed to say are, you know, Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Ha'olam. That's not what you said. And then he picks up the cup and says, this is my blood that is shed for you. Whenever you drink it, do this in remembrance of me. And now they're really freaked out. Because what the heck are you talking about? We don't drink blood. First of all, that's not your blood, but even if it were, we don't drink blood. Blood is taboo, basically in all its forms, in Judaism. So this is really kind of weird, but it's the Passover meal that he's talking about. So it is legitimate to say that when Jesus said, whenever you eat this, what he meant was, whenever you celebrate Passover, do this in remembrance of me. Because that's what he's doing, right? This is the bread that is broken at the end of the Passover meal. This is the cup that is shared at the end of the Passover meal. It is a legitimate argument that Jesus intended us to receive, to celebrate communion, to share the bread and the wine only in the context of a Passover meal, because that's, the words bear that interpretation. As a matter of fact, a couple of theologians have argued that really the sacrament of the Christian church should have been foot washing. That it's washing one another's feet that we should do all the time. And that we should only have communion once a year. That's obviously not where we ended up, and I'll talk about why. But that the washing feet, people would have done all the time. Right? Anyway, anytime you came in, somebody washed your feet. The sharing the Passover meal happened only at Passover. But that's the context of the Last Supper. Right? Now, I'm going to leave the Last Supper and the Christian community for a minute, and we're going to go and talk to about the Jewish community. I'll come back to the Christians, I promise. But the Jewish community goes on with their customs and worship for about another 40 years after the death of Jesus. Jesus' death and crucifixion is somewhere in the neighborhood of 33 AD, in that range. We put little C in front of it to mean circa, right? Right around then. By 70 AD, the Roman Empire is fed up with the lawlessness in the Middle East. Particularly, the Jewish community has kind of lost control of their people. And the empire's just done. These Jews are more trouble than they're worth. And so in 70 AD, the Roman army destroys Jerusalem. Literally destroys Jerusalem. It's the end. There's been a bunch of wars going on, but 70 AD is the end of it. The Roman army comes in. They burn Jerusalem to the ground, including the temple. And they disperse all of the populace in the area. This is called the diaspora in Jewish history. And the people of Israel are forced out of, not just out of Israel, but out of the Middle East in general. They're forced, and they go lots of different places. Some of them end up in Greece and Turkey. A lot of them end up in North Africa. Some of them eventually migrate through to what is today Russia and Eastern Europe. But they're forced out. And so they end up in small communities all over the world. Well, these are a people whose primary worship was focused on the temple in Jerusalem, right? So for the next, and it's a couple of hundred years, this is a big deal. The question is, how do we as Jews worship when there is no temple, and when we can't get to Jerusalem, and when we're living in really small communities where we are the outsider? Because everywhere they go, they're the outsider, and their communities are small. So what happens, and it happens over time. It's not like a decree comes down from on high and says, this is what you should do. But over time, Jewish worship changes its focus from primarily being temple worship to primarily being home worship. So the Sabbath is celebrated in the home, and it becomes a very big deal to keep Sabbath in your home because it's one of the things that you can do no matter how many of you there are, right? So Sabbath becomes a really, even more of a focus than it was at the time of Jesus, because it's something they can do wherever they are, however many of them there are, that they can do in their homes. And Passover becomes something that is done in the home. And to this day in Judaism, the important thing about Passover isn't going to the synagogue. It's the dinner in the home. A lot of people don't even go to synagogue on Passover, especially women. But a lot of people just don't bother going to synagogue. You go to synagogue for the High Holy Days, for Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah. Not necessarily for Passover. The focus of Passover is the meal in your home.
How do you get the sacrificial lamb?
Well, you don't anymore. Because you can't sacrifice the lamb because there is no temple. So what happens is, instead of the lamb, the meal itself becomes very ritualized. And specific food items to represent specific parts of the story are brought in. And this, again, this happens over centuries, not overnight. But generally, there's a main dish that doesn't have anything much to do with the story. That's just what you eat. But you always have a bone. It's usually a beef bone these days because most people in America don't eat lamb. And boiled eggs and bitter herbs and salt water
borscht.
I can't ever say it.
That's like borscht.
It's apples and cinnamon and sweet all mixed together.
And walnuts.
And walnuts. It's kind of like mincemeat. If you've ever had British mincemeat pie, except it doesn't have any meat in it. But it's the chopped apples and nuts and spices. And they all represent parts of the story. And the unleavened bread, which has always been a part of the Passover meal, over time and with the coming of industrialized food, becomes matzah that you can buy rather than make. Because eventually people stop making bread in their own homes, right? And so...
And you have the cup for Elijah.
Right.
And the afikomen, which is a part of the matzah that is hidden in a little silk purse someplace.
And hidden, and the children go look for it.
Yeah.
So all of these things, rituals come around the thing because we can't go to the temple anymore. And so there's a prayer, a whole set of prayers that are said for the Seder meal, which is what the Passover meal is called. And it was the Maxwell House Coffee Company that printed the most common Seder instructions. I actually have a copy of that. But and the father of the family leads the prayers, and it always ends with, say, next year in Jerusalem. And that develops over time because we can't be in Jerusalem, but next year we'll keep the Passover in Jerusalem the way you're supposed to, right? But it has become a home-focused worship rather than a temple-focused worship because there was no temple, right? And I'll talk more about how Jewish worship evolved with the diaspora and then with the Holocaust later. But that's where the Jewish branch of the Passover, where the Christian branch of the Passover went, was the world is spreading, and the Christianity is spreading, and it's spreading into non-Jewish people, right? Paul begins spreading the gospel to all of these people, some of whom aren't Jewish, a lot of whom aren't Jewish, and by about 100 AD, the vast majority of Christians are not Jewish. They're Gentile. Well, they're not going to keep the Passover meal. So how do we do this in remembrance of me if we're not, keeping the Passover? Well, the Christian worship moves from the Sabbath, that is Saturday, to the Lord's Day, which is Sunday, because it's the day of Jesus' resurrection. So the earliest Christians, the disciples and the first generation Christians, went to the synagogue on the Sabbath and kept the Sabbath according to Jewish law, and then did their own worship on the Lord's Day, Sunday. As Christianity becomes more and more Gentile, the Sabbath piece drops off, and Sunday becomes the day of Christian worship. Sunday in the Roman Empire is a work day. So Christian worship doesn't happen on Sunday morning. It happens on Sunday evening because people are at work all day. Christianity is not legal. It is not legal to be a Christian. And so mostly the way that the Christian communities worship is they gather in someone's home for dinner. And I said before, I think this is why the potluck is so deeply ingrained in Christian culture, because it's a potluck. Now, nobody can afford to feed 30 or 40 people, so everybody brings what they have and puts it on the table, and that's dinner. As a matter of fact, in one of the letters to Corinthians, one of the problems the Corinthian church has is that their communities are made up of a combination of rich and poor people. The rich people don't have to work, so they get to the place of worship early with their good wine and their good food, and they just start eating and drinking. By the time the poor people come with their offerings, all of the good food is gone, all of the good wine is gone, and the rich people are drunk. And so Paul, chides them for this behavior and reminds them that that's not the way it's supposed to be. But that's kind of a window into the way that that works. The earliest texts we have of Eucharistic prayers have blessings for all kinds of things. It has blessings for olives and for cheese and for grapes and for all kinds of other things. And it basically worked kind of like a Passover meal. People ate. While they ate, they were taught. Not about the Passover from Egypt, but about Jesus and Jesus' teachings. And then at the end of the meal, the presider blessed the bread and the wine, and everyone shared the bread and the wine, just like the early Passover meal, right? So that's the earliest Eucharist, is that. And it comes to be done every week, because they're gathering every week, so why not? You know, we have bread, we have wine, we should bless it. And so the Eucharist, the sharing the bread and the wine, becomes the central part of the meal. When Christianity becomes the legal religion of the empire, the Christian worship suddenly becomes legal, and Sunday becomes not a work day. Because the emperor has said Christianity is the religion of the empire, therefore the day of worship is not a work day, it's...
Isn't it Constantine?
Constantine, yeah. So now all of a sudden, wait, what? And it happens like this. It really does, in very little time. So now all of a sudden, well, wait, we don't have to work. We could worship in the morning. Jesus was raised from the dead in the morning. We could worship in the morning. We don't have to worship after work, because we don't have to work. But the other problem is, everybody now who wants a position in the empire has to be Christian. So there are all these people who are Christians. They don't fit in people's houses anymore. And there are way too many of us to have dinner or breakfast or whatever. We can't do a meal. There's too many of us. We could just share the bread and the wine. And so the meal piece and the blessing of the olives and the cheese go away, and we're left with the bread and the wine. And so the Christian worship becomes the shape that we see it today. You come, you hear the word of God, you hear a teaching, you say some prayers, you say the Eucharistic prayer, you share the bread and the wine. And so that shape gets established by about 400 AD and continues that shape of worship. Now, over time, a couple of things happen. It becomes really difficult to share the cup with people. And particularly in the Middle Ages, and particularly it really ramps up in the 1300s at the time of the Black Death, when people are just dying in droves. People are very superstitious. And one of the things they think might be causing the Black Death is God being mad at you for receiving communion unworthily. So people, because we don't know germ theory, we don't understand it's the rats, right? You get up in the morning and are feeling fine, and you're dead by the time the sun goes down. What can explain that? Well, God must be mad at you. Well, why is God mad at you? You're basically a good person. Well, maybe you weren't really ready to receive communion. And so people stopped receiving communion. They would go to church, pardon the expression, religiously, but they wouldn't receive communion in case they might be doing it unworthily. So they would sit in the church and pray their rosary beads or say their prayers and watch. But remember, the priest is up there with his back to you, and he's speaking in Latin. So people got bored. And we're not maybe necessarily paying as much attention as they should be. So the church instituted this concept of ringing bells at the time when the priest said, holy, 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 or sanctus, sanctus, sanctus in Latin, as he would have said. to get people's attention that, hey, that it's happening now. This is the important bit. Pay attention up here. And so the Sanctus bells started being rung to say, hey, pay attention. It's happening now. But most people stop receiving communion except maybe once or twice a year.